Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod to discuss Michigan State's second round matchup against number one seed North Carolina Tar Heels with a trip to the Sweet 16 on the line. Before we begin, a quick word of thanks to all of you who support the show via one-time gifts and on a recurring basis. A special thanks to Patreon supporters at the Mateen Cleaves level, Bill Church, Brian O'Donnell, and Chad Hickey. Dream and Green supporters, Adam Walzak, Dan Rankin, James Benton, Jim L., Michael Bosnick, Paul Marsh, and Scott Driscoll, and all the Scott Skiles supporters on Patreon, as well as Rich Wagner and Kenneth Cremet on Substack. If you appreciate the MSU content we crank out on, head on over to thefinalfoursontheschedule.com/support to reach the necessary links. After cruising through a first-round contest against Mississippi State, Michigan State finds itself facing the mighty Tar Heels, a bit of a nemesis in the NCAA tournament for Tom Izzo and the Spartans. North Carolina easily dispatched 16-seed Wagner, setting up this matchup that will for sure draw really high ratings. So the question is, can Michigan State make a second straight Sweet 16 by taking out top seeds? So let's talk about the Tar Heels and what Michigan State needs to do to win the game. The Tar Heels, as I mentioned, are the number one seed. They are 28-7 on the season. ACC regular season champs. They've lost in the championship game to North Carolina State, which is one of the big thieves getting into the tournament. They're number 9 overall at KenPom. Michigan State is now up to 16. They're coming off the 28-point win over Wagner. And they're number 22 on offense and number 8 on defense. Offensively, they're overall a very good team. They value the ball well. They're only 33rd in turnover percentage. Good offensive rebounding team at number 57. They shoot the three really well at 35.7%. They're 81st in getting to the line, meaning free throw attempts to field goal attempts, and shoot at 75.5% when they get there. The only area where they're mediocre is shooting from two, where they're 168th. By comparison, Michigan State is 167th. On defense, as I mentioned, they're very, very good. They're exceptional. Great defensive rebounding team at six. They limit successful two-point attempts. They're number 33. For threes, they're 52nd, and they're also decent at limiting three-point attempts at 127th. They don't foul a lot, because they're number 70 on fouling, and I guess the only thing they don't do really well is they don't really turn people over. They're 300th in turnover percentage against, and they have an element of unluckiness. They tend to foul the wrong people, and team opponents shoot the free throws well against them. So they got the anti-Wisconsin luck here. They do play fast, as they have even, going back, I guess as long as I can remember, they're 42nd overall tempo, 36th in average length of offensive possession. Certainly a game you would not be surprised to see a lot of up and down and a tempo we are rarely get to see. We watch Michigan State during the regular season.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is one of the advantages you often see play out this time of year for Michigan State is they face opponents who are not used to Michigan State's blitz counter breaks.
Right.
The way they meaning that they're pushing the ball after a made basket, or the way they transition from defense to offense off a defensive rebound. If you can try to prepare guys for it, but if you haven't experienced it, from what we've seen over the years, it's a very different thing to deal with. The problem is the only other team in the country that does it the way Michigan State does is North Carolina. So, this is the fifth time in the Tom Izzo era that Michigan State has faced off against North Carolina in an NCAA tournament game. The last two times it's been in a Final Four. It's been a while. We haven't seen North Carolina in a tournament game since that 2009 bloodbath that I, and I'm sure many of our listeners, had the misfortune of attending at Ford Field. They don't typically have an advantage here, because North Carolina does exactly the same things Michigan State does. It's not unique or different to them. And so consequently, you don't have that advantage you hope to get. And you do get against other teams most of the time.
Right.
I would say the surprising thing about that one offensive weakness we talked about, two-point shooting, the thing that really shocks me about that is, with Michigan State, at least you can understand why they're mediocre there, because they don't have a true post threat. You know, Malik Hall's kind of evolved into a decent one, but he's not a dominant low post player. And so all their two-point shooting really comes either via penetration, some in transition, but mostly in the half court, at least, it's via penetration from the guards or mid-range shots. That's where most of it comes from. And that's never going to be likely to be, you know, unless you've just got fantastic penetrating guards, you're not going to have consistently great numbers. North Carolina has penetrating guards. RJ Davis is about as good as they come. But they've also got a dominant low post player in Baycott, a near seven-footer. And it's surprising to me that they've struggled as much as they have. But, you know, again, if that's your biggest weakness, you're a pretty good offensive team. Yeah.
It's almost like
they
the number
do
one
everything
seed.
Else. Yeah, they do everything else well. You know, they're not a great three-point shooting team, but they're a good one.
Yeah.
They're a little worse than Michigan State, but they're certainly good enough that you don't look at it as a weakness. Great job valuing the ball. Great job getting second chances. Again, they play with pace. All that stuff is really good. Defensively, it's even a better picture, because the only things that aren't great, they don't turn people over, okay, but when you limit opponent shot success the way they do and you clean up the defensive rebounds the way they do, I'm not sure that's such a big deal, right?
Yeah, right.
And then the bad luck with opponents' free throws, but to their credit, they also don't put them on the line typically all that much. So, you know, overall, yeah, they, as you say, the picture is what you would expect for a highly seeded team. I do think that they were considered to be the worst of the one seeds for good reason. And I concur with that. I don't disagree with it. I think their track record this year is clearly a little bit below the other three one seeds.
Yeah,
based on the regular season performance. But look, this is still a dynamite team, and they're going to be a hell of an opponent for Michigan State to try to beat.
Yeah, they're tough, and the nice thing, I'll say, the one sort of good thing to look at this matchup. At some point, you know, if you want to make it to the Final Four, you have to take out the one seed if you're not the one seed. So this is an opportunity for Michigan State to sort of clear the path a little bit. So you got to do it at some point. So maybe you can do it right away, and then you can see some of the other debris can be taken out before you get down to the next matchup. So anyway, at some point you got to play these teams. And you're not going to the NCAA tournament playing six games and not playing anybody. So let's go through the starters, brought to you by the Brothers Adjusting Gutters, who sponsor the player that Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter. You can find out their picks on our contest page. You can check out and see what Kurt and Greg are doing. You can check out their stuff and what they do at our support page at thefinalfours.theschedule.com/support. They can do anything you need with your gutters, because gutters are super important. If you have a house or if you have a business, you need to keep that water away from the foundation where it causes all kinds of trouble. Puddling in your backyard or some things like that. So they can take care of all that stuff. Maybe you just need it cleaned out. Maybe you just need some parts repaired. Maybe, you know, if you want to get a jump on next winter, you want to put those heaters on so the ice doesn't build up in the gutters. That's also something they can do. They can also put in the underdeck ceilings. So that goes underneath your deck so that you can keep your deck dry underneath. So you can have almost an extra room if you've got a nice big deck out the back of your house. So they can put all that stuff in. Check it out at our support page. 10% off if you mention Final Four before you check them out, either on the east or the west side. All right, so beginning with the starters, Elliott Cadu, 6'1", freshman point guard. He's one of the guys who's actually doing okay. He averaging 7.6 points a game, leads the team with 4 assists per game, and better than 2-to-1 ratio, shooting 43, 18, and 65. But he doesn't shoot a whole lot of threes. But he's a guy who reclassified and actually did well, unlike most of these players who reclassified, and they just seem like overwhelmed.
Well, in particular, guys who reclassify at that position.
Yeah, right.
At the point guard. There have been examples we've seen over the last few years since reclassifying up has started to become a thing. Of guys who were highly rated and they just don't live up to expectations. He's not a perfect player. A 3-point shooting percentage in the teens isn't exactly something to inspire confidence. But in all other areas, he's actually been pretty good. And he doesn't take a ton of them. He only averages 1.3 attempts from outside the arc per game. So he's not loading up on those shots. So that shows a maturity. Look, Carolina, particularly when Caleb Love decided to transfer, it meant they had a spot where they really needed another ball handling guard, because RJ Davis, who we'll talk about in a second, is certainly a very good ball handler, a guy capable of running an offense, but they don't want him to be the only guy, because that would negatively impact the other thing he does really well, which is score the ball. Think of it kind of a little bit like Michigan State's situation with Tyson Walker. Can Tyson Walker run an offense? Yes, he can. But if you're having him do that more or less as a full-time job, that's taking him out of another role right. that you would like to have him available for, which is your primary backcourt scorer. So that's what Cadell coming on board, reclassifying, and running the offense competently, playing good defense, doing those things, that's what he's enabled North Carolina to do. So even though that jump shooting number isn't great, I think they're pretty satisfied with how this has gone. I just think about a guy like, if you remember a couple of years ago, Indiana had Christian Lander.
Yeah, I was going to say the guy from Indiana, yeah.
Who was a very highly regarded high school player. And he transferred up, and it was immediate, or not transferred up, reclassified up. And it was immediately apparent that physically he was not ready for it, and he never got on track.
Yeah.
You know, so it's played out well given the track record of these things for North Carolina.
So moving on to RJ Davis, 6-foot senior, one of the best guards in America this year, averaging 21.4 points a game on 43, 41, and 87. He also averages 5 free throw attempts per game, so lest you think he's just a jump shooter. He can get to the rim, cause problems, good ball handler, a little under 4 assists per game, and a 2-to-1 assist turnover ratio. Oh, also, he has 4 rebounds a game, too, for good measure.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just a really good player. You know, there's no two ways about it. I would say in a lot of ways, similar impact to Tyson Walker. He's been a little better scorer, a little more consistent 3-point shooter this year, but similar in that he's truly a 3-level guy. He's a good defensive player, not as disruptive a defender necessarily as Tyson is, but he's a really important part of what they do. And as you say, he almost chips in almost 4 rebounds a game on top of everything else. So this is just a very good veteran player having the kind of year that you expect your high-level veteran players to have, you know, simply put. And he's my pick for the guy to keep in the gutter. I don't know if they can't shut him down. He's too good for that. But if they can limit him, make him less efficient than he normally is, that would be a big success story for MSU.
Yeah, maybe just like have him get plugged up in the downspouts, best you can hope for. The next would be Cormac Ryan, our friend from Notre Dame, who's transferred this year, 6'5" senior, averaging 11.2 points a game, 38, 34, and 86. I think against Michigan State in that game, he shot 90% from 3 or something like that. It was crazy.
You're talking about when he was at Notre Dame.
Yeah, he was at Notre Dame last year. Yeah, last year when he hit like every single shot.
Yeah, he had a crazy game.
That was probably the only game.
We don't see.
Yeah.
The only game we don't see a rerun watching. Of that. No, I think, you know, he's been good. He's been a double-digit scorer. He's obviously played a role for them, giving them a wing with a little bit of length. I remember him being a very suspect defender at Notre Dame. But given Carolina's defensive profile, they must have figured out a way to at least get him to play effectively as a team defender.
Yeah.
I think that the three-point number is a little bit disappointing. I would think that they would have figured he would be, closer to 40%. It's not a horrible number, but 34%, they added him thinking he would give them more than that. But
yeah.
That aside, this is a guy who's certainly contributed for them and given them a reliable veteran presence who can hit some shots in that spot at the three.
What was the name of the guy from Northwestern who transferred to Indiana? And I feel like the first year he came over, he really didn't shoot very well.
I'm drawing
a blank. He graduated last year, but
he
was much better the second year, where he's a much more effective from outside the arc. I wonder if it's a similar situation in some ways. But anyway, this is what happens. This is my last day in my 40s, so that's just what happens. next up is Harrison Ingram, 6'8" junior transfer from Stanford, averaging 12.1 points a game, 9 rebounds a game, shooting 42, 37, and 61. He's third on the team in three-point attempts, and he's been a real good addition for them at the four.
Yeah, big addition. He was a guy who was very highly regarded. He was a McDonald's All-American, went to Stanford, played there 2 years, and decided to transfer to North Carolina, I think, because he was tired of nobody seeing him play and wanted to win. And so both of those things have worked out. But he's just a critical addition for them at the four spot. I mean, he's given that you look at those numbers, the scoring numbers are solid, the shooting numbers very efficient, and 9 rebounds a game on top of that, plus steady defense. You couldn't have asked for more, really, if you're Hubert Davis. You know, I mean, I think that he's been quietly, especially considering he plays at North Carolina, this is surprising. I don't hear a lot of people talk about him when they talk about, you know, major, major impact transfers, but he's absolutely been that.
And so finally rounding up the starting five, Armando Beckett, 6'11", 240-pounder, averages 14.1 points a game, 10.2 rebounds a game, and he's on about every other commercial break with his H&R Block commercial. He also has 1.6 blocks a game, shoots 55 and 40, although he barely shoots a three, and 78% from the line, and he gets a lot of free throws.
Yeah, 6 attempts per game. The three-point shooting attempt number is misleading because it's 4 for 10.
Yeah, right.
On the year. So it's well under like even half an attempt per game. But that's not where he makes his money anyway. Bacot is a load. They list him at 6'11", 240. I think he's heavier than that. He's a big boy. and he's skilled and knows how to use his size to create space. So he is going to create problems for Michigan State. I would say, in terms of the totality of his impact, he's... And I got to think about this, remembering everybody they played. I guess, especially if I don't consider Filipowski from Duke to be a 5, I think he's more of a 4.
Yeah.
But among pure 5s, I would say Bacot is the second best that Michigan State has seen behind only Zach Edey. So that's the caliber of player you're talking about. Now, his scoring numbers aren't crazy, but that's because Carolina is a pretty balanced offensive team. In any given game, Bacot's capable of going for 25.
Yeah.
I mean, that can happen. So he's going to create problems for Michigan State. There's no two ways about it. He impacts the game pretty much in all ways for a big. He's a reasonably good shot blocker. He's a very, very good rebounder, and he's an effective player in the low post. So he stresses you. No two ways about it. Very good player.
All right, so moving on to the reserves, we'll start with Steph Trimble, 6'3", sophomore, averaging 5.2 points a game on 17 minutes on the floor, shooting 46, 37, and 66.
Yeah, and he didn't play very well last year. He was a highly regarded recruit who actually Michigan was recruiting very intently. if I remember correctly, I think he's from the Midwest.
Is he a Mellow Trimble? Or is that different? Just happen to be the same last name?
Just same last name. No relation. But I want to say Seth Trimble is from the Midwest. I want to say maybe Wisconsin. Anyway, Michigan, I know, was in on him, and they elected to go with Doug McDaniel instead. How'd that work out? And Seth Trimble went to Carolina, very athletic guard, with some decent size, too, at 6'3", but he struggled last season. This year, he's their sixth man. I mean, he's playing the most minutes of anybody off the bench. You see that the shooting numbers are pretty good. They're not on super high volume, but, you know, they bring him in. It's kind of like Michigan State with Trey Holloman. Like, they bring him in, and you don't feel like you've gone down,
right,
you know, two levels.
Not a big downgrade.
In terms of quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then go on to Jalen Withers, 6'9", senior transfer from Louisville, averaging 3.9 points a game and 3.4 rebounds a game in 12 minutes, shooting 52, 22, and 80.
Yeah, you know, they needed another bigger body, and he was a guy who had experience at the high major level, and, you know, he's been able to give him 12 decent minutes a game, not a big score. The rebounding numbers are not bad on a per-minutes basis, but, yeah, pretty good stuff, considering the role.
And then Jalen Washington, 6'10" sophomore, former Michigan State recruit, averaging 4.1 points a game and 2.7 rebounds a game in 9 minutes, shooting 69, 53, and 64.
Yeah, those shooting numbers are crazy, right?
Yeah, now they're 53%
from
three.
Very low volume. But here's the deal. Jalen Washington is going to be, has been an interesting story and will continue to be an interesting guy to watch as his career unfolds. He was extremely highly regarded in high school, out of South Bend, if I remember correctly. And Michigan State was in on him heavily, but he committed to Carolina fairly early in the process, I think while he was still in his junior year of high school. He got hurt, and he was hurt last year, too. So I think he played some last year, but sparingly. There were real questions, as I recall, if he was ever going to be able to be the guy that people thought he was at a younger point in his career. He is starting slowly but surely to make good on that. Those are very impressive shooting numbers. He doesn't play a ton of minutes, but the minutes he plays, he's pretty effective. And I would suspect, you know, next year, you're going to see an increased role and more of an impact from him going forward. So they've got to be very happy. He's got to be very happy. And those shooting numbers, that was why he was as highly regarded as he was. Because he was, we talked about this with Coach OG, Mike Garland. Yeah. We had him on in relation to Dawson Garcia. And he said, you know, the reason everybody had Dawson Garcia rated so highly is that he was 6'10 or 6'11, whatever he is, but he was just hot, just on fire from three that whole spring.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was the deal with Jalen Washington. Big kid, but had a real ability to shoot. Or like Xavier Booker, let's say, is another example of that. So it's not a surprise, if he's healthy, that he's doing this. You don't expect 54%, but not a surprise that he's shooting well. Because that's why people wanted him in the first place.
And so finally, rounding out the players of note is Paxson Wojcik, 6'5", grad transfer from Brown. He's obviously the son of assistant coach Doug Wojcik. He averages 1.6 points a game in about 8 minutes, shooting 33, 19, and 71. So I think it was probably safe to assume that Doug Wojcik will not have to scout North Carolina as hard, as heavily as another opponent. He probably has watched every North Carolina game this season, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'd be curious about that. You know, I don't know how much spare time he actually has to do that, but I'm sure he's seen more than most. I would feel comfortable saying that. You know, it's funny. When he hit the transfer portal, my initial thought was, well, maybe Michigan State takes him as preferred walk-on, because I didn't think he was good at Brown, but that's a different level. And, I mean, really a different level.
Yeah.
And his numbers weren't knockout. You know, some Ivy League guys you'll see transfer up. It's like, well, yeah, that guy was Ivy League player of the year, whatever. Paxson Wojcik wasn't quite
right.
That. I was very surprised to see Carolina offer him and make it clear that, like, yeah, we think he's going to be in the rotation. And he mostly has been. They've played 35 games. He's been in 28 of them. But you see the three-point number is just abysmal. And he was, I think that's the reason they added him, is they thought he could add some shooting. And that hasn't happened.
Yeah. I could have told him that wasn't going to happen. I watched him in Moneyball. Nice player, plays hard, but I don't think he's, you know. As we always talk about.
He was like a mid-30s guy at Brown.
Yeah, right. They need bigger windows, and you don't have them in the high the high majors, right? That's the difference.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, just looking over the lineup real quickly, it seems like this team doesn't have a whole lot of – their bench is pretty short, and they don't play a lot of minutes outside of Trimble.
Yes, and the kid from Louisville.
Withers, yeah.
Plays 12, yeah.
So they're playing like
those
seven-man rotation,
primary
basically.
Guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, Washington will play, but more like eight, but he's more limited.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's – And it's interesting because, you know, again, Carolina consistently, and in fact with this team, plays fast. So normally those are programs that you expect to play more people because they're running up and down the floor. You expect it's going to take a little more out of them, right? That's the theory at least. Well, it's, Carolina, you're right. It's guys are playing heavy minutes. It doesn't seem to have negatively impacted them, not judging by today, at least. But it is interesting. It's a shallow bench, a little more shallow than Michigan State's, that's for sure.
Well, then we'll move on to the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. If you need your glasses cleaned, not your hard glasses, but like your actual windows, you want to contact them. They'll do a fantastic job if you're in the Grand Rapids area, although they have a very large range. So if you're anyone in West Michigan, I would go ahead and reach out to them because they do fantastic work, great pricing, 15% off. You mentioned Rebound when getting your estimate. You can find ways to get to the estimate at their support page at tffinots.com/support. They took care of my house. They can do businesses. They can do high rises. They're so good, they even did the state capitol. So there you go. You can't go wrong with them. Right now, I'm down 1.5 points, so I'm in a bit of a pickle right now. It's looking a little grim. I need Michigan State to make it to the Sweet 16, so I desperately need them to win, and I need to pull off the point here. So you get to choose first, I'm pretty sure, this time, because I got Lee Call last time.
Yep.
Even though, ironically, you tried to trick me into picking Mati Sissoko, and yet that's who you went with, is like reverse psychology.
Well, do you know what that is? That's the sweet smell of justice. So I've got the first pick, and now it's tougher, right? Because we've got Mati Sissoko on a heater. I'm going to still go with Malik Call.
Okay.
I think Mati could do it the way he's been playing, but I'm going to go with Malik Call. I think Malik Call's got a hell of a challenge, too, because, as we mentioned, the guy he's going to be dealing with for a lot of this game, Harrison Ingram, is averaging 9 boards a game. That would lead most teams in the country. It's only good for second on this team because they also have Bacot. But it's going to be a challenge for Malik, but I'm going with him.
Well, I guess I'll just go with Mati, since why not? Because the second choice, I think we feel comfortable that Malik's good for 5 to 7. And it's just whether someone cycles up to exceed that or if Malik has a big game.
Right.
So I guess we'll go with Mati. All right. So they're going finally to the 5 keys of the game brought to you by Nudge Printing. They are supplying all the prizes for our bracket challenge and all our challenges, basically, just because they have awesome stuff. You can head over to Nudge Printing at nudgeprinting.com. Super cool stuff. They've got the vintage stuff. They just had the Gruff Sparty. They've got all kinds of, they got Izzo things on there now. They actually have other schools too. If you're not into Michigan State as much, for maybe your spouse or your significant other, you want to get them some stuff, but they don't want to wear the Michigan State stuff. They've got a different school, like Albion, let's say. You can find it there, or Hillsdale, like if you're, you know, like the guy who plays for Oakland right now. You can get some stuff there too. Head on over to Nudge Printing. You get 20% off if you type that in. It's one word at checkout. All right, so the first key to the game is the boards. I feel like we mentioned this about every game with a different team for different reasons. But again, North Carolina, excellent, fantastic rebounding team, much like Purdue. And Michigan State, despite their woes of rebounding, recently have been pretty good. especially when they have a team that's really good they're playing against. If they're playing against some, you know, the dregs of the rebounding world, then they tend to get killed on the board. So I would assume they'll do well.
Well, I'm not ready to assume it yet, but you're right. That has been the pattern. And we have to see if Michigan State can do it again. When they're facing a challenge against a team that statistically is very, very good on the boards, and in Carolina's case, it's at both ends, which really does put them in a unique category, because the only other team Michigan State's seen that's comparable to them in that way is Purdue.
Yeah.
But when you're facing that, can you level up and hang with a team that rebounds that well? And Michigan State, for the most part this year, when facing those kind of opponents, Baylor, Illinois, Purdue, to some extent, Mississippi State today was an example of it. Michigan State's done that.
Yeah.
You know? And that's really impressive, and they're going to have to be impressive again, because it's critical. If Carolina is just tattooing them on the glass, they got a problem. You know, the nice thing is here, you know, physically, I mean, Baycott is a really tough matchup, but he's not Edie.
Yeah.
He's huge. So they've got a chance to maybe hang with him. And then otherwise, you know, yeah, Carolina plays a couple 6'9 guys off their bench, but so does Michigan State. It's the teams that have, you know, that second big player that plays a lot of minutes that you wonder about. Like Malik Hall's got a deal with a 6'10 guy. Well, Ingram is essentially the same size. So he's a very good rebounder, don't get me wrong. But at least in terms of physical tools, stature, it's a better matchup for Michigan State that way. Understanding that they've still got to deal with Baycott and the challenges that he presents.
Right, right. All right, so moving on to the second key to the game, turnovers. So we mentioned before, North Carolina values the ball. Michigan State, they certainly have to make sure they don't have the performance they did today with turnovers, but maybe they can get something going there. It's a team that generally values the ball pretty well too, and they tend to get a lot of steals, Michigan State, so maybe they can get some easy baskets against this tough defense.
Well, the one advantage here is that, you know, North Carolina does a great job valuing the ball. So, other than today, does Michigan State. So, at the other end, though, Michigan State generates a good amount of turnovers. North Carolina does none of that. So, that's the one area in this battle where you can say, well, there's a distinct advantage in one direction. So, what you got to hope for is that Michigan State is able to force a few more mistakes than Carolina is.
Yeah.
Carolina won't force them. It'll likely, if Michigan State has turnover problems, it'll be like some of them we saw today where they're throwing them up to the, as Izzo said, to the tuba section. That will be the deal, right?
Yeah.
And so, that's really the story. But I do think in a game like this, you try to pull off the upset. You're facing a team where you're the underdog. You need some small edges, maybe a lot of them. And this would be an area where I think, even with Carolina's great guards and great track record of minimizing mistakes, there's a chance that Michigan State could get that edge. Because
right.
Their guards are just a little more capable of forcing a mistake than our Carolina's.
All right, so moving on to third key to the game is the transition game. Again, I feel like a little bit this is Spider-Man pointing at each other here. Both teams like to run and like to get transition going. Who's going to get the edge here?
Yeah, and if one can get the edge over the other, that could be a very big deal.
Yeah.
Now, that's going to be easier said than done, because we got Carolina as a very good defensive rebounding team. They will run off makes just like Michigan State does. They do all the same things. And they also do them very, very efficiently and effectively. So that's your challenge if you're MSU. Can you find a way to carve out an edge here? And for Carolina, I'm sure they're thinking the same way. Can they find a way to carve out an edge in an area where it's also the other team's strength or one of their strengths?
And the fourth key of the game is, again, threes. Michigan State got a lot. They were 10 of 23 against Mississippi State.
Yep.
So, you know, it's obviously a big part of their game, and Not that they probably need to launch 23 of them, but to have it hit at a good clip is important.
Yeah, and look, Carolina is, we said they're not quite as good a three-point shooting team as Michigan State, but they're good.
Yeah.
I expect that they'll hit some. It would be nice if they were a little bit off, but I'm talking here mostly about Michigan State's offensive end. When they are hitting threes, they're obviously getting production from their guards. And we know this team has to get offensive production from their guards in order to compete at the highest possible level, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to see it in a game like this, where, and we've said these things, you know, in a game like the one against Purdue in the Big Ten tournament, you know, it was kind of hard to see an equation where Michigan State could pull it off if they weren't productive from three. Well, they weren't productive from three in that game. Fortunately, neither was Purdue, but Michigan State came up a little bit short. And I think if they'd been a little more dialed in, as we talked about, had a lot of good looks that just didn't go, if they'd been a little more dialed in, maybe they actually win that game. You look at a day like today, or you look at a day like the Minnesota game.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't take a lot of them. I'm just talking about recent games, mm-hmm. but really, this has been a pattern for much of the year. So it's just a big part of what Michigan State looks to do. So if guys like Jaden Akins, Tyson Walker, and Trey Holloman, to some extent too, are missing good open looks, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. And so the fifth and final key to the game is history. Michigan State 0-5 in tournament games against North Carolina.
Yeah, and 0-4 under Izzo. Two of them in the Final Four, one of them in a national championship game, the other one a semi in 05. They lost in a Sweet 16 game in 1998, Izzo's first trip to the tournament. And then I think it was in 07, they lost a second round game. So the only time they played North Carolina at this stage of the tournament was in that 06-07 season where Drew Dietzel kind of dragged Michigan State to the tournament. Right. They beat Marquette, if I remember correctly, in the opener, and Tom Crean, and then lost to Carolina when that team that would eventually beat them for the national title 2 years later was just starting to coalesce. Those guys were a lot of those key guys from sophomores that year. So the track record against Carolina in the tournament is not good. The other loss, the one non-Izzo loss in the tournament, was in the 57 Final Four in a national semifinal game. They lost North Carolina, who then went on to beat Wilt Chamberlain in Kansas in the final. That was the jumping Johnny Green team for our Michigan State basketball historians for Michigan State that got there. It was a triple overtime loss, by the way. So the history is not good with Carolina in the tournament, right?
Yeah.
Pretty obvious statement. But here's something to maybe make you feel a little better. I think I've got my math right. Just before we started recording, I went through Izzo's track record, counted it up. I believe this number is accurate. On the second game of a weekend in the tournament, which this is.
So the fast turnaround is what you're talking about. Like the one,
right, the
2 day prep.
The one day turnaround, which, you know, it's funny. They talked to Charles Barkley after the game, and it just, there are examples of this every year, and we go through this every year where people wonder, why do they decide to add Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith to the broadcast in the NCAA tournament when they don't watch or really care about college basketball? I like Charles Barkley,
yeah,
but this is another example of that. Barkley says, I would love to see Tom Izzo's record where he's got like a week to prepare, because that's, you know, great coaches, you give them that much time, just, as if that was the excuse. You know, and he actually said, you know, as opposed to like just having one day. It's like, no, man. I mean, Izzo's good under any circumstances in the tournament. We were just talking about it before we went on air. I believe I've got this right. He's lost in the first round in, what is this, 26 appearances now?
Yeah.
He's only lost the first game, so either around a 64 game or the one first four game they played. He's only lost that game seven times or six times. He's lost that game six times, so he's 20-6 in those circumstances. Now, the record in Sweet 16 games is not bad. It's not quite so dominant, His record in, and those are games where you have some time off, right?
5 days.
Not quite a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Final four, same thing. The track record is not as good there. In those national semifinals, he's lost, what is he? I think he's 2-6,
yeah,
right?
He's only gotten to the championship game twice. Yeah.
Yeah. So
only
where he stands out amongst his peers is in two areas. One of them is, which they talked about some today, winning a game as the lower seed. He's done it 17 times. That's the most in history. I believe Jim Boeheim with 15 is second on that list. Now, you can cut back and forth on that as to what that really means, because you could argue, well, what that says is he underachieved in the regular season. Okay. But nevertheless, he's been seeded, the lower seeded team, and he's won more than anybody in history. But the bigger number to me is that record on a one-day turnaround. If my math is right, and I could be wrong, but if I'm wrong, it's only by a little bit, if at all. I've got 24-7 as a record.
Yeah, that's amazing.
In the second game of a weekend.
Almost a 70% win rate.
That's what this is. So which do you have more belief in? Do you have more belief in the 0-5 lifetime of the schools against Carolina in the tournament, or do you believe in the record number of wins as a lower seed and the 24-7 mark on the second game of a weekend on the one-day turnaround? We'll see. I think it's interesting fodder both ways. Another thing to consider is, you know, when we talk about Carolina, those games came against, I guess the first one for Izzo was against Bill Guthridge.
Uh-huh.
But then the next three were against Roy Williams.
Yeah.
This is Hubert Davis. Now, Hubert Davis had a great year this year, and it was important because he needed it to bounce back after last season's debacle, which was worse than what Michigan State's done, by the way, because they were preseason number one and they didn't make the tournament. So for however bad as you think this year's been for MSU, it can be worse. Just ask North Carolina. But I'm not saying I don't think he's a good coach, but that's not Roy Williams.
Yeah.
On the, you know? And so might that lean more in the direction of those latter two numbers that we mentioned and not the 0-5 lifetime against Carolina? I don't know. But we'll see. It's a heck of a matchup. And if you're Michigan State, you've got to be absolutely thrilled about being in this position, given the way the season has gone. You are 40 minutes from a shot at the Sweet 16. And, you know, you get a chance to rack up a win that, if you get it, will be remembered in program history. You know,
if they
pull this off, they take out a one seed, people will talk about it. That will be a positive thing that gets connected to this group of players. And that's a big deal. And that's what this time of year is always about, right? It's about creating a legacy, cementing a legacy, putting your footprints in the sand, so to speak.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, and you look at the streak against Duke was not good, and that got broken, and they went to the Sweet 16.
Right.
The Final Four that year in 2019.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
It's there
to end.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, for sure. And we were talking about this before the tournament started with Dom. I mean, Dom didn't like any team in this region. I mean, he's like, you could make an argument for about any team in here, because there's not one team that's just obviously a cut above the rest. Where you can say that probably in the other three regions, that the number one seed is quite a bit better than all the other teams. You know, whether they make it through or not, it's another matter.
Yes. But,
so, anything else with this game that you have? Because I have one other question for you.
I think it's a hell of an opportunity. I hope they come out and play with the same kind of intensity, the same kind of toughness, and they're able to execute the same fashion as they did against Mississippi State. And if they can do that, hey, I'll take what comes.
Yeah. So one of the interesting bit of news, which is not really related to the tournament, but the G League is dissolving, or it's finishing. They're done with their last year.
I hadn't seen that yet.
Yeah, they just announced it today. One. So what does that mean for the Bryson Tucker recruitment? Do you think that changes things? Because now it's more... Because I think they're feeling... My guess is the economics of the G League doesn't make any sense anymore with NIL. You know, players can make more probably playing college ball. Or
I think that's
pretty close.
One part of it. I'll get into the second part, but I think you're right about one part of it. When they started with this, and specifically, as you're saying, the G League Ignite team is dissolving,
correct.
Not the G League.
Correct.
Okay. So when they instituted Ignite, it was a different environment. It was this, I got to say, man, Adam Silver's a weird guy, real weird. I've never understood his fixation with teenage players because he almost seemed to take it as a moral crusade that, no, we ought to be able to get these kids paid if they're good enough to play in our league. The problem with that is there was never, to my understanding, anything close to the kind of support from ownership that it would take to make that happen. That's who Adam Silver works for. So he feels a certain way about something. Who gives a you know?
Yeah.
It's if you tell me that Tom Gorris feels a certain way, believe it or not, that has more weight. And I never quite understood his whole deal in that regard. But anyway, when that push started, NIL did not exist. It happened very quickly. And there have been a select few kids that have opted to go the Ignite route. But particularly the last 2 years, Ignite has been an abject failure.
Yeah.
Guys have not developed well. And that's supposed to be the bottom line, right?
Yep.
The whole argument with this was, hey, they're going to be professionals. They're going to be able to play basketball, work on their game, all of that. As much as they want, they're not subject to these ridiculous NCAA imposed limits. They get paid. It was all of this kind of stuff. And really, it hasn't panned out very well. Now, I can also say this year in particular, that's not just an Ignite problem. If you look at the draft, college players are not ranking particularly high.
Right.
This is not a bumper crop, you know, that's coming out this year, which is in part driven by the fact that the freshman class is so weak because that's where a disproportionate number of your lottery picks are going to come from, right?
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think the economic imperative clearly is gone. Guys are making as much, nearly as much more in college than they can with Ignite. But I think the thing that's maybe even more important is it's getting harder and harder to justify it from a development point of view. You know?
Yeah.
That's my read, at least. So, anyway.
All right. Well, as we're recording this...
Let me go back to your question, though.
Yeah.
With Bryson
Tucker.
Oh,
yeah, right, yeah.
It's a good question, and I honestly don't know the answer. Here's one thing to think about. Ignite is not the only pro option.
Correct. Yeah.
God, Oakland's going to beat Kentucky.
You tell when we're actually recording.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. I'm watching this too. I can't believe it.
Rocket Watts with a great drive and kick. There's the NBL in Australia, which has this. I forget what they call it. They have a name for this program where they'll take high school kids in and develop them for the year. The compensation level is pretty good, and the sense I have is that the caliber of basketball and the development has been better than what's been going on with Ignite. So that doesn't, just because Ignite is gone, does not necessarily mean that all avenues, and of course he could always opt to go to Europe too, which has always existed, although there's been far, or anywhere else in the world, but there's been less of that recently. It's tended to be Ignite, there's the other U.S. league I'm drawing a blank on right now, which I assume Overtime. Overtime still exists, so that's another option. So Overtime or NBL in Australia would be two options for him. honestly, it is so quiet on that front. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, right. All right, well, we'll leave it there, I guess. We're going to go back and watch some basketball. Hopefully, you're enjoying your relaxing Friday here as you're watching some games, as we're recording this late Thursday night. But we should say, as of this recording, we don't know the time for the game, but we will be back after the game at some point to break it down and talk about how well Michigan State did and whether they're going to the Sweet 16 or not. So until next time, the Final Four is on the schedule. Go Green.